Okay. We are recording Greek Club. We are about to achieve a monumental achievement. I guess that would be a cognate accusative, where you achieve an achievement. I think we'll finish off the Sermon on the Mount. Many thanks to Dr. Jeff Oswald, who was here last week. And he told me that Greek Club read through verse 25 of Matthew chapter 7. This is the final little unit in the Sermon on the Mount. Sometimes it's called a parable of the two builders. So, as he said, the good news is verses 24 and 25. So, he was happy to leave me with the bad news. It's just to say 26 and 27. So, all right. Just reading the Greek first. Kai pas ha akouon mu tous lagus tutus. Kai me poion autus, hamoio thesetai andre moro, hustus o kadamesan autu tain akian, epitain aman. So it's a very parallel construction to the positive portrait in verse 24. So we have the participle with the article, the one who hears, and then modified by pas, so everyone who hears, and maybe since it's present stem, who goes on hearing or typically hears or something like that. Now you might actually be confused immediately as you're reading along the line, because akouo, as you might remember, can take either a genitive or an accusative object. And so you might see mu and think to translate everyone who hears me. But then if you keep reading, of course, we get tus lagus tutus, which is accusative, so it has to be the direct object. So the mu then would modify these words. So we translate everyone who hears these my words, these words of me. And now the one article does double duty. We have article, participle, and then kai, and then me poion. Of course, if you're going to negate in the New Testament, if you're going to negate a verb other than the indicative mood, you use may and not u. So, the one who hears and does not do them. Tutu, or autus, referring back to Jesus' words. So that's the subject of the verb hamoiothesetai. This is hamoiao. It's an omicron contract, which explains the omega in the stem. So this is just a future indicative passive third singular. Everyone who hears these my words and does not do them will be like, or will be compared to. And you follow this verb with a dative. So we have a foolish man from on air. Hustus is a relative pronoun. It often is just synonymous with hus, so probably here. Who, now from oikodomeo, you see the augment of the diphthong at the front of that gives you this funny omega with a subscript, just an aorist indicative. So, who built of him the house, his house, epitain aman. And unless you have the King James or something living in your head, which we all do, you have to look up aman. It means sand, right? So. And the contrast, of course, is the one who builds his house upon the rock. So, very strongly parallel. The teaching of Jesus in the Synoptics is very often kind of poetic in a broad sense. It's repetitious. It's easily memorizable. And there have been some recent studies, that would have impact on how readily that time and culture could actually remember the words of Jesus and pass them on. So that's another subject. So that's verse 26. Any questions? Very straightforward.
Hostis. Uh-huh. Is that just a contraction of the pronouns hos and tis?
That's exactly what it is.
That is?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Okay.
And it
so
parses that.
Whomever a certain one.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yep. Yeah, and so the plural, so this is nominative masculine singular. The nominative masculine plural would be hoi tenes.
All right.
Because the hos goes to hoi,
yeah.
And the tis goes to tenes. So it actually is, you can get some bizarre looking forms, but if you just remember to parse each half of it, so to speak, then it actually works, right?
Does that occur outside the nominative?
Yes, yes it does. Yep. Yep, absolutely. And I can't think of an example right now, but it does. Okay, good. Anything else? All right. Verse 27. Kai kat ebe he brache kai elthen hoi patamoi kai ept nusan hoi anamoi kai pras ekafsan te oikia ekene kai epizen kai ein he ptosis autes megale. So we start with katabino. This is the strong aorist indicative active, third singular. The subject is rain, brache. You can see, flip back to Matthew chapter 5, verse 45. You can see the cognate verb here. Verse 5:45 is, in order that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven, because the Son of him he causes to rise upon the righteous and good, kai breche, and he sends rain. So that's the verb is brecho, and here we have the noun breche, right? So this is rainfall. And the rainfall came down, and the potamoi came. Amen. Now, if you know your African animals, you can figure out this. The hippopotamus, right, is a river horse here in Matthew 7, verse 27. And the rivers came, the waters came. Kai epnusen, pnuo, happily, means to blow. And if you know what an anemometer is, right, so one of those things that measures wind velocity, right? So animas means wind. We have all sorts of happy cognates here from English terms that a person might reasonably know. And the winds blew, epnusan. Kai pros ekapsan, this is pros kapto, means to fall against or hit against. And they hit against, and takes the dative object here in 7:27. And hit against the house of that one. Remember that the demonstrative pronouns, when they modify a noun, always stand in predicate position. So that's why it follows the arthrous noun, te oika. Now we have the result. And as a result, epizen. From what verb? Anybody? Epizen? Hipto. Very good. This is the strong aorist. And it fell. Third singular. That is, the house fell. And now we have our friend ein, which is a verb, and it's from eine, it's the imperfect, and the subject is ptosis, which you could probably figure out just from words in the context. It means the action of falling, right? So the falling of it, ein, was megale, great. And megale there is feminine singular nominative because it's the predicate nominative after the linking verb, right? So the Sermon on the Mount ends on a very the whole last section has been sort of warnings. It's dangerous out there. Watch out for false prophets. And here, be sure to hear the words of Jesus and believe them, and so as a result, do. So, but that's kind of theology rather than grammar. So not too bad. Comments on verse 27 or questions?
Yeah, right at the end of the verse. Very readings. Kai hoi pharisaioi. This is sort of some of the readings. Why would that be in there?
Let's take a look.
Makes sense.
Verse 27 at the end.
Oh, I'm looking at verse 29. I'm looking at 29. I'm sorry.
Okay, there is actually Svadra is actually an adverb, and it means exceedingly. Okay, good. All right. Yeah, that would be great if they and the Pharisees were great. That would be the addition. that would work. So good. Okay, and this literally brings the end of the words in red, so to speak. This is the end of the Sermon on the Mount, and we can just kind of read on, and we'll see how far we get. I think. I had said that maybe after we finished Matthew's, good, decent Greek and not too hard in some ways, I thought maybe we might begin with some readings from St. Paul. Yeah, we can do Hebrews if you want, but I'd have to spend more time preparing, that's for sure. But actually, if any of the faithful Greek Club warriors or if anybody who listens on the iTunes site would like to suggest a reading, we could certainly take it up as long as it's not too much work for me, because I'm essentially a lazy person.
Do we have to diagram the sentences?
We do not have to actually diagram the sentences. That's right.
We get to. Right.
Good. Just remember, with your shield or on it, right? Yeah. Good. So I'm open to suggestions for our next text, so just send me an email. Okay, good. All right, now what we have in verse 28 is the first of the five concluding formulae. You might know that Matthew has five large speeches of Jesus and some small ones as well, but they all end in some similar way. So let's just kind of take verse 28. Kai egeneta hate telesen hai Jesus tus lagus tutus ex aplesanta hoi achloi epite didache autu. So this is the formula. Kai egeneta hate telesen hai Jesus. And it's the same at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, chapter 10, 13, 18, and 25. And in 26:1, you might know, it says, when Jesus finished all these words, Matthew's signaling, end of the major teaching of Jesus. This is a kind of a Septuagintalism. It's an echoing Vayahi in Hebrew, and it came to pass. Now, interestingly, Matthew, who is commonly described as writing to a Jewish audience, other than these five formulaic concluding statements, I think you can count on the fingers of one hand the number of times he does this kai agenita construction. Whereas Luke, on the other hand, uses it a lot. So it's just kind of an interesting thing. So, literally, and it happened when Jesus teleod, completed these words. Now this the verb ex place on time. Anybody know the dictionary form of that? Actually, you could figure it out. It's from
ex temple.
It's actually easier
play
than
wrong.
That. It's
play
easier. I think it's from ec placo.
Oh,
I think there's a couple of these verbs that are pretty similar. So if that's wrong, then the ghost of Dr. Robbie or somebody just inhabited me and I got it wrong. But I think it's actually from ec placo. In the middle, it has an active force. So the crowds began to be astonished, maybe because it's an imperfect rather than an aorist. The crowds began to be astonished. A P plus the dative, as you know, can mean almost anything.
Yeah.
So here, just at the teaching of him, and this would be a good example of a subjective genitive.
Mm-hmm.
Because didache is a verbally based noun, and out to Jesus is doing the teaching. So it's an interesting study of how the crowds function in the Gospel of Matthew. They never, by and large, really could be called disciples. They're often favorable toward Jesus, they follow him around. But I think there's always a distinction to be made between the mathetai of Jesus, which would include, the smaller group of the 12, but mathetai is a larger group, so we would call those Christians, right? And the achloi are, again, they're interested, they're asking questions, sometimes they're favorable, sometimes they're not.
And in Matthew, does he typically teach the disciples, and there's also crowds that might be listening in?
It certainly happens that way more than once. So here, if you remember from the beginning, if we flip back to 5:1,
his disciples and sat on the mountain.
He sees the crowds. He went up on the mountain. He sat down. His disciples approach him. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So the crowds are there, and in fact, 7:29 will signal out even more strongly. The field of this aspect of studying Matthew has been plowed quite a bit, but I think there's a kind of a general consensus that, again, the crowds are not believers. Some people in the crowd become believers. Right? So they're, at the very least, they're astonished at his teaching.
So is that the basic distinction between the disciples and the crowds?
Yeah, faith. Right. Because the crowds follow him around. They literally, physically follow him around. Right.
So it's not a matter of the disciples hung around longer than the crowds did,
no,
or anything like that?
Doesn't seem to be. And I think what actually happens, especially, I think it'll come clear after we read verse 29, that as you read 8 and 9, what you have is people, in a sense, emerging from the crowd, showing themselves to be disciples. First guy that shows up is a leper. If you want to, you are willing. You are able to cleanse me. And so he has faith in Jesus' authority. The centurion is the next guy. He really has faith in Jesus' authority. So it's kind of beautiful the way Matthew portrays it. A recently published commentary points this out.
So where can we get that?
You know, I don't get royalties. I don't care if you buy it or not. So no.
Library.
Yeah.
The library. That's
yeah,
right.
Exactly. You can steal the library's copy. Okay. That's right. Yeah, right. It's clearly not worth that much. But verse 29 is actually kind of interesting. So let's take that up, lest we forget. So the crowds were astonished at his teaching, and then verse 29, ein gar didaskon autus, hos exousian echo, kai uk hos hoi grammates auton. And then we get the Pharisees added on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, again, we have our friend ein. Remember that gar is post-positive, that is to say it never stands first in its clause. So when you translate, you put it first. Ain is the imperfect, and then we have the participle didaskon. So what do you call this kind of a construction where you got linking verb followed closely by participle?
Periphrastic.
Periphrastic participle. Very good. And you can translate high five from the Greek guys. Hellenic high five. And you can often just translate these progressively. For he was teaching them, just like in English, right, with a helping verb. Now, what's really interesting here is this construction, hos plus the participle. So, literally, as echon is from echo, of course, as having authority. One of the possibilities here, and I think it works quite well, the grammar has mentioned this, is that when you have hos plus the participle, it can express the claim or perception of the referent of the participle. In other words, it says something about what Jesus thought,
mm-hmm,
rather than necessarily what the crowds thought.
Okay.
See? So, and this is what astonished them, for he was teaching them with the claim that he had authority and not as their scribes. Well, that makes a lot of sense when you read the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus says, you have heard that it was said, but I say to you, know, he just delivers the goods. And so this verse doesn't necessarily indicate that the crowds believed him. But what was stunning, and it would be the same thing, you know, if Mel stands up in the church and just starts making stuff up, you know. You would go, well, it invites the question, who does he think he is? Which is, in the case of Jesus, is exactly the right question, right? So this little host plus the participle construction, which does kind of, it's sprinkled throughout the New Testament. By the way, one possibility, we might just do this now that I think about it, unless somebody has another suggestion to which I would be open. We might just take up 1 Thessalonians, because there's some interesting Greek stuff there. And I know that there's at least one, if not two, examples of the same construction, where Paul says that we were among you as... And again, what he's trying to communicate, this is what our perception was. This is what we were trying to claim. So so this is what stuns the crowds. And it's unlike the Pharisees, who, like you and I, not to compare us to the Pharisees, but we have to footnote things. We can't just say, thus saith the Lord. We have to say, in Matthew chapter 8 or in Isaiah chapter 20 it says, which is the way we proceed, because we don't have that intrinsic authority. So. All right, so that's a part of the narrative conclusion, and now we have to get down off the mountain, right?
Actually,
yep,
really
Ben.
Anal question that only I would ask.
Good. I'll make up an answer, Ben, if I don't know one.
In the end of the last full line, you have "uk" there.
Yes.
It seems to me like "may" would be more appropriate there.
Okay.
Given the construction, why would they use "uk" there?
Well, and he was not doing what?
So with the periphrastic instruction, you're still going to use oops?
Because you're negating the linking verb.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Right. That's a good question. I think the ook negates the implied aim rather than the participle. Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Yep. That's a very good question.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
The answer. Boy, I was scared there because when Ben asks me questions, I never know if I'm going to know the answer.
So to translate that into stuff that I might understand, the main verb is still aim there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in a sense, it's aim didasko together.
Right.
Right.
I mean,
but
it's more of a helping kind of addition to describe the aim.
Yep. Yep. Okay. The main verb is the imperfect. Got it. Right. So we should have we should all change our names to Ben, because we have 2 out of 5 Bens here, 2 out of 6, 2 out of 5, and we'll get Ben. We'll get a bunch of Bens up here. That'll be good. Okay, fine. Let's get down off the mountain. And then we're almost time stop. So we start with the genitive absolute. Matthew likes to start paragraphs, and if this is in some sense of the beginning of a new unit, introducing the rest of chapter 8. So kata bantas de autu apa tu arus e koluthesan auto hokloi poloi. So katabantas from katabino, right? Jesus goes up on the mountain in the beginning of 5, becomes down now. And the reference to the participle is up too, so literally, him coming down. Matthew, again, uses a genitive absolute like this not infrequently and often temporal sense. So after he had come down from the mountain, you look at arus, and you might forget it's a third declension noun. But you've got the article, which is your friend, and so you can parse it as neuter, singular, genitive, right? And now we have the verb akalutheo. The theta eta can fool you into thinking it's some sort of sixth principal part verb. This is just an aorist, indicative, active, third person plural. Ekolutheisa. If it was going to be the aorist passive, it would be ekolutheisa. It would actually have 2 theta etas in it. Makes today a good day. So so many crowds followed him. And then, we'll just do one more verse and then we'll stop. Just to get into this is a wonderful text. Kayadu, Matthew likes to, hey, and look. Yeah. Lepros, pros elthon, pros ecune auto legon. Kyria eanteles dinasaime katharisai. A leprous guy. Approaching, pros erchomai, participle, probably attendant circumstance, approached and began to pay homage to him. Pros ekune is from pros kuneo, and it's actually an imperfect. It looks like a present indicative active with the epsilon iota on the end.
Mm-hmm.
But that's actually the result of the vowel contraction, the epsilon plus the connecting vowel. So he began to pay homage to him, saying, Lord, vocative, if you want, and you could put a comma there, do not sigh, this is my sigh tie from dunamai, this is a present indicative active second singular, you are able be to cleanse, right? And just because we have to get the good news in there, we'll stop here, and ektenos, stretching out the hand, Hapsata, this is from hapto, which in the middle means touch. He touched, and you touch people in the genitive, so to speak. So he touched him, saying, I am willing. Kataras thisthete, aorist, imperative, passive, second singular, be cleansed. And immediately the leprosy of him was cleansed. And that's a nice place to stop. So. All right, very good. Thank you very much.